I'm Marcy Howard, and for the next hour, we're going to have a discussion about faith. The mission of About Faith is to gain peace and understanding with one another through answering questions about a variety of faiths. We are not here to debate right or wrong. We're here to gain knowledge and understanding of one another through respectful conversations with faith leaders about their own journey with faith. So let's get to know our panel today. Welcome, Father Pike Thomas.
Nice to be here.
Welcome, Ashish Modi.
Thank you for having me.
Could you both tell us a little bit about your house of worship and its location?
You start, Ashish.
We are in Shreveport here, and we have a temple. We call it Sadhu Vaswani Temple. It is on Lakeshore Drive, and it's a house of worship that is practically open every day, but not too many people go on weekdays. But on Sundays, it is open to entire community. We have classes for our young kids. We have prayers, and we also meet each other and share something called prasadam, which is a gift of God in term of food. And it brings our community together. We also have some discourses where we discuss our scriptures and get the meaning of life. And we are fortunate that even though it's a very small community here, we are a wonderful place of worship and bringing our community together. And I'm glad to be part of that community.
Well, I'm retired, as you know, Marcy, but my last church, which I still consider myself a member of, is St. Jude out in Benton. And we have a brand new church, which is gorgeous. I'd invite anyone who is in that region up in North Bossier to come and take a look, because it's truly a beautiful, beautiful edifice and complex of buildings, which praise God, I think, by its very beauty. But anyway, I've been a Catholic pastor at the Diocese of Shreveport for about 35 years now. And been in several parishes. So I've enjoyed every minute. By chance, I came upon some remarks that I had found that I was looking for in other ways about where my vocation came from. And it was fascinating, because when I say this, it's true. I have been the most joyous person, and to watch what happened when I truly turned my life over to God has just been terrific. Took me a long time, by the way. I was already 40 when I went to seminary, or 39.
All right. Well, are you ready for some questions?
Sure.
Okay. The first one is, what is the purpose of prayer in your faith? And either one of you can start.
My faith, because I'm born in India, and it is a Hindu faith. It is more of a philosophy than a religion. It teaches us how to live life. It's a way of life, practically. And the purpose of prayer is an expression of love and devotion to the Supreme and a reverence towards Him. We aspire to reach Him by conscious communion with Him and longing to be with Him, united to be with Him. And we want to unite our soul to the Supreme Soul. And according to Hindu philosophy, it is a part of yoga. Yoga means uniting your soul to the Supreme Soul. And we believe that earnest prayer with pure heart and clean mind quiets our mind, settles down the ripples of the mind, and we see our purpose clearly. It brings us inner peace by controlling and our thoughts. It inspires us, gives us strength. In prayer, we respect, show our love, we plead, and display our faith to obtain inner peace. It stirs up positive emotions of joy, forgiveness, love within us, and get rid of negative tendencies that we all carry. it also helps us becoming free from fears. And we live in a world, we're always fearful, but when we pray with our clean heart and pure mind, it kind of frees us because we are surrendering ourselves to the Almighty, whoever that Almighty you may worship. And it just makes our life more joyful, meaningful, and creative.
That is a beautiful way to put it. Yes. Wow.
Because that comports very easily, I think, with the understanding of prayer in the Catholic Christian tradition, which I think if you had to define it, which we define everything, you know, in the Catholic Church, it's a conversation with God and all the things that come from that. And the word conversation is very important, even though there are many different styles of prayer within our church, a 2,000-year-old edifice, so to speak, many schools of thought about it. It's a dialogue with God. I think in a more human, I guess you might call it, way than simply what we would sometimes call spiritual, which I think is not necessarily a fit way to describe that, you know, what you described. But our connection is truly one which is mystical, I think, but available to us. But it's the conversation part, which a lot of people don't get, you know, in terms of our
communication Christian. And conversation with God, yes.
Yeah, because they do it themselves. It's their thing, you know. I mean, I think prayer of petition has been certainly the thing that so many people are into, one of the forms of it. Where they're asking for something from God. So I've gone a little too far because I've covered several questions there. But I think basically the conversation idea is what I'd like to emphasize. And it's very much, I think, is like what you suggested, Ashish, that we're becoming in touch and united with the Almighty as much as we possibly can. And of course, the more we pray, the closer we can get that because of the fact that those things are ways in which we can, the way of thinking with our raising our minds and hearts to God, the old saying that we use when I was growing up, is the way in which we can unite with him. A lot of different people use it, different ways of saying that, but I think that's basically what I would say in prayer.
And according to Hindu philosophies, there are four main ways of reaching the Almighty, mm-hmm. or communicating with the God, and many times communicating within ourselves, because that's what we believe, that God is within all of us.
Yes.
And how to reach God within me, then I can reach God within you. And so there are four different ways that they're prescribed that you can reach Almighty. And one of them is called Karma Yoga, which is mm-hmm. a path of action, selfless action. The second one is called Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga means path of love and devotion, self-surrender and love, practically. Love to the Almighty. The third one is called Jnana Yoga, which is a path of enlightenment by learning about scriptures, using our intellectuals by reading scriptures and by understanding and gaining the knowledge of who we are and what's the purpose of our life. And once we learn that, then obviously we become self-realized. And the fourth path they talk about is Raja Yoga. And that practically deals with awakening the dormant energy that we all have within us. By practicing Raja Yoga, there are also different paths calling Kundalini Yoga. So those techniques of meditation and breathing techniques and certain other postures, and that helps us reconnect to our own energy, and by channeling our energy to the right areas, we can connect with the Almighty. So right now, prayer that we are talking about falls in a category of Bhakti Yoga, which is more devotion, faith, and love towards Almighty. So there are many different ways of reaching Almighty. But prayer is practically by devotion to God through bhakti.
Yeah, we would call that a privileged way of doing it. You know, that really, that's the road in which we can come as intensely closer to God than any other. Obviously, it has to be borne out in the way we live, which is the same thing you were saying. And that's one of the gifts which prayer gives us, is a way of living, because we get in touch with that way of living that God himself has given us in through his creation. And we would say, you know, I love what you said about, and I've never thought about it exactly like you said it, but I really like very much the idea that you emphasize our connection with God, our divinity, if you will, that we are part of God, that we never apart from him. As we like to say today, that the Holy Spirit is the part of God in the Christian church, which is inside us, so to speak. Mm-hmm. If you can't segment God, of course, which always is a very difficult mystery to try to parse, but we can understand that the divinity has been placed in us at our very conception.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. Correct. The prayer is a very simpler way of reaching the God. It means you don't require to be so highly intellectual or disciplined, physically disciplined with your bodies and physically fit. All you require is a physically fit, mentally and in heart, you got to be pure. And when you are pure in heart, then it's easier way of reaching Almighty through prayers. And that's, so if we look at the world, maybe 80, 90% of the people can easily go to the path of devotion, because all you require is a pure heart and faith in your heart to reach the Almighty. Other paths that we talked about, yes, they are strenuous sometimes. They require intellectuals. They require studying of scriptures, which is not possible for everybody. But prayer is the one simpler way of reaching the Almighty.
Yeah, Jesus said, you know, in the scriptures, one of my favorite quotes of his is, I've come for those who are sick, not those who are saints, you know? And that, so the worthiness is a separate question, and one which should not impact prayer if it's from a pure heart. Yeah, I think that is a very important distinction that you've made there.
You know, one of the things that I see in corporate prayer is that someone is asked to pray, and my experience has been they start to back out of the circle and says, "Oh, I'm not a good prayer. I can't do that well, and I just don't pray out loud." Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, corporate prayer is the category we would say, especially, is liturgy. That's what we call corporate prayer, at least in the liturgical churches, those that consider themselves with a set format that we use as a structure, you know, to have our prayer. It's very difficult for those who are in this type of prayer to learn how to pray in a very small group, I think. I think the hardest thing I believe I've had as a priest is forming groups outside of Mass, where this is the only place that you're going to learn to pray in small groups, you know, and it's very structured at Mass. And to get out of that, I mean, everybody, again, is just like you say, are absolutely petrified. I mean, you can't even get them to do the blessing over the food. You know, if I'm there, you do it, Father. You know, and I'm going, gosh, you know. So I always tell them the host has to be in charge of this. So anyway, wherever we are, but I mean that area is extremely important, and many people from the more evangelical faith in Christianity do that a heck of a lot better than unfortunately the Catholics have been schooled to do. And I think it's because we have this clergy structure and all of that, besides the corporate worship, which is so structured. But it's one of those several types of prayer that are very important, because it says, Ashish, I think, was what you were saying, that it's that together motif. I mean, that's what corporate prayer is. And even if it's only a limited number of people, it partakes of all of humanity.
Correct. You know? So let me explain you how our corporate prayer works. Okay. For instance, every Sunday, after reciting some kids' prayers and everything, we have a corporate prayer where everybody gets up, we light lamps, we ring bells, we offer flowers, we offer fruits, and all that worthy stuff to mighty God, and then we sing. And obviously there is somebody who's leading the singer, but everybody jumps in. Basically, even people who doesn't know how to sing, they can always participate by clapping.
Yeah.
And people who, some
it's
people-
a great idea, I'm gonna use it.
Some people ring the bell, some people blow the conch, some people just simply close their eyes and stand in circle.
Right.
It creates the spatial vibrations, practically. Even though not everybody may be singing, they keep their eyes closed and focus their mind to whatever image they may be focusing on. It just brings the vibration in the atmosphere. And what I can tell you is after prayer is over, there is a pinpoint silence. And the silence goes on for a minute or two. Okay. Where you cannot, nobody says anything, and you can actually hear their breathing. And it gives so much inner peace and quietness of mind. And that's the beauty of corporate prayer. You're bringing all the souls who are praying together. And when we're united, obviously you can do better. So that's the purpose of having corporate prayer too. Let everybody sing or be part of that joyous ride. And maybe there will be a miracle.
No, that's exactly what Vatican II said when we revised our Catholic liturgy in the 60s. Because before that, it was simply the prayer of the priest, really. The people in the pew did their own thing. I mean, they weren't completely connected. I mean, the joke is we used to hear ladies doing their rosary by the clacking of the beads along the pew. And that was their rhythmic sort of inclusion in the Mass. But today, we're the liturgy are not only invited, but expected to participate. Congregation is invited to participate totally in everything that goes on. But the one thing we don't do very well with that, and as Marcy knows, I'm a big singer. And I love other people to sing. So when I do Mass, they know they're going to have to sing. Those who know me know he's not going to be happy with us if we're not singing. And I think that has opened a whole new door with them as well. But the thing we haven't gotten into, which is so fascinating, because the only real sort of meditative prayer was coming from the people in the pews, because the priest was doing all the talking and they were listening or falling asleep, one of the two, or getting caught up in the mystery, you know, of the Eucharist and in our corporate prayer. But today, talk about something that's a big Western problem, I think, is that we do not meditate very well on things. And when we do, you can feel the uncomfortableness in the congregation when we try to give them a couple of minutes after communion or a couple of minutes after one of the readings to think about what that's means to them and to let God in on the situation. And it didn't happen very easily. So we're fighting that. And you all, it comes naturally, I think, from your background. And I love that.
Yes, as I said, because as I talked about different paths before, I talk about meditation also falls in something we call Raja Yoga. And there are different techniques of meditations. And what we do in West here is mainly part three of meditation, which is called Hatha Yoga. If you go to any meditation or yoga places here, they're doing more physical fitness. You know, you're trying to make sure so you do certain postures, certain asanas that makes you physically strong and physically, and which is a good thing because when you're healthy, obviously you're going to be happier. So that's, but there are many different paths of meditation, many, many different steps involved. And because they're difficult, mm-hmm. you know, we try not to focus so much. For instance, the first part of meditation that we talk about is called yama. Yama means you are reacting, you're adjusting yourself to outside forces, how you're controlling your own actions because there's so much outside influence, yet you are not being influenced from outside and remain serene within you. So that's yama. The second one is called niyama. That means you are disciplining yourself. You are training like commandments. You're talking, you're not stealing. You hygienically, you're clean. You're eating clean food. You are not cheating. You are being truthful. Those are the very difficult things that you have to change internally within you. And they're very difficult to change because you have to change complete way of living your life. And when you do those first two steps, then the third step is a little easier, which is the breathing exercises and Hatha Yoga we talk about, where you're learning to breathe and how to breathe in and breathe out. And when you do that, you're focusing your mind because you're focusing on your breath in and out, and eventually you're focusing your mind. And then eventually you do sadhana, which is you're focusing your mind on Almighty or whatever deities or whatever you're thinking. And so it takes concentration, but it's a step-by-step process. And we tend to ignore certain parts because they're very difficult to perform. Mm-hmm. So what you're saying about meditation is people are not able to sit quietly for 2 minutes because they're not able to concentrate their mind because there's so many things influencing their mind, inside factors, outside factors, what's going on in politics, what's going on in house. And unless you're able to control those factors, you cannot focus on what is so important to you, which is Almighty.
This is a really beautiful way that you were talking about something that in Christianity they call contemplative prayer. Mm-hmm. And it's prayer without words.
Right.
And prayer without thought. And it's training and teaching in that type of prayer to be quiet and to calm down and to remove yourself from all those, what's going to happen politically today, you know, or the bad guys coming, and then what's my grocery list, and, you know, what have I forgotten to do in an appointment? And you remove yourself from that and you sit in just quietness and be okay with quiet and let the spirit realm be where your presence is and your awareness is. And I've been in prayer groups that did contemplative prayer, and there wasn't a thing said or done for an hour.
Correct.
And it's almost like physically, it's almost like you have taken a long vacation or a nap. You know, your body is just
right.
Correct.
Moving different and being different. And I think that's one type of prayer that the Western Church has really lost. You know, it's rare. I visit a lot of different churches because I want to know, you know, the different people in the different churches. And I rarely experience a time corporately with people where the pastor or the worship leader or somebody would say, let's just be quiet for a minute.
Correct.
You know, and have it be totally quiet. Yeah. And once you learn how to do that, though, it's like, well, when are we really going to do prayer? you.
We have only one particular prayer style like that, I think, in the Catholic Church. I mean, it's regular. It's actually corporate and individual. And that's what we call Eucharistic adoration. You know, the Catholics believe that Christ has really become present in the Eucharist in a mystical way, obviously. I mean, he's not standing before you physically, but that he's present nonetheless and just as real as anything you can imagine. And the wafers, the hosts that are consecrated at Mass do not change their being. And so we have what we call Eucharistic adoration that's in essence an hour of silence where we have, and it depends on the parish, how many people show up. But in our parish, which we're in a mission territory here, so there are a lot of these deep things in Catholicism, which I'm afraid have not been as deeply, talked about and emphasized. But we have maybe 20, 25 people at the most, usually at those things. But in South Louisiana, which is very traditionally Catholic, as you know, that's probably the favorite element today of prayer, is people come together and there's a couple of hundred people sitting, kneeling mostly, but sitting also and contemplating the presence of God in their lives. It's through this mediation of Jesus in the Eucharist. So it's very powerful stuff. And it's one that I admit I haven't been as devoted to as a lot of folks who do it, because they find it remarkably powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought of that while we were talking, because it's not one of the things you hear about very much outside our church. Go ahead.
See, the basic quest most of the human beings, or most of the religious human beings who are committed to prayer and going to church and temple and other places, at one point in life, they all get a question: who am I? We all want to know. And the second question they get is, what is the purpose of my life?
Yes.
Now, how do we answer those questions? And those questions always are within you. You just have to dig very deep into it to find out. And meditation, the contemplation prayers that you're talking about, that's the way to access yourself to find out about who you are. And when you figure out who you are with the quietness of mind, you settle down all the mud. It's just like when there's a muddy water, if all the mud settled down on the bottom, you see the water clearly. You can see what the fish is going in the water, or you can see even small amoeba in the water. You can only see it when you settle down the mud. And with the quietness of mind, with 1 hour contemplation, you are digging within your heart to find out who you are. Your mind is quiet. And when your mind is quiet and clear, you can see clearly the purpose of who you are and what you want to do. So there are multiple benefits of contemplation prayer. And obviously, we are learning about ourselves, but also to learn the purpose of our life. And with the have a faith and devotion to the God within you and what are other deities you believe in, I think it's become very important that you're also connecting your own soul with the universal soul. And that's the connection that you're seeking when you're praying.
just one more thing about that. It's real interesting because of what you said earlier about people seeking. The young people love this particular devotion of Eucharistic adoration. It astonished me, because you can't imagine young people being quiet, you know, generally in our society. But that's how a lot of them see a part of the Catholic Church, which a lot of times the elders do not, interestingly. I think it's a powerful thing that they are finding out about what it really means to pray.
Correct.
So,
When we talk about this, we've talked about a particular style of prayer or purpose of prayer. Can we talk a minute about the different kinds of prayer that we have in our faith? Like if someone is sick or had a heart attack and they call and say, "Will you pray for us?" You know, we don't say, "Well, let's just be quiet for 10 minutes. You know, it's not the time to do that. It's time to do different. So can we talk a little bit about the different kinds of prayer that are in your faith?
Well, I think, you know, I mentioned earlier, you know, prayers of petition, which is, I think usually that's what that particular thing you described is, that we would invite others to pray with us for some special thing. And right now we are in the midst of a great prayer, celebration, if you will, for a young baby who was born prematurely in Nashville, of all places, but has connections here in this area. And we have about 50, 75, 100 people praying for this child, that God will use every way of healing that child through the doctors, through love, through care, through so many different ways. So, I mean, that's certainly one that's, I think, very popular, and not only in the Catholic Church, I think in the evangelical Protestant churches as well, particularly. And many more. The Psalms have four different ones, you know. But go ahead, Ashish.
Well, as I said, we are talking about what kind of different kind of prayers. And that brings a topic of what are they? So most of the time, you know, according to our Hindu philosophy, there are two kind of prayers practically. One is called ego-centered prayer. And in that prayer, person puts personal and selfish demands before God. They say like, "I don't have this, I need this, give me this, yes. Give me that." All right. The second one is called prayers for divine. And that is the most beneficial because it comes from within and it involves a lot of faith within you. And basically it says, "Oh Lord, give me the strength to face the life that you have given me. And I need your grace, and I need your grace to fulfill what you brought me in this world for, but without your help, I cannot do it. And please not just bless me, but bless everyone else with me so that they can also face and have a strength to face the life they're brought up to." So those are the two kind of prayers. And again, when you're talking about you're praying in a group for a child who is born in Nashville, and that's the divine prayer we are talking about. You're not asking about, "Hey God, make sure I don't get this virus," or "Make sure God, I remain healthy." You're asking for a prayer for somebody who's miles away, and as a cooperative way, collective way that you're praying, saying that, "Hey divine force, you know, please make sure that child that you brought in the world remains healthy." And, right. And that's a divine, because it's not for your own selfish gains, it's for somebody else's. So I think it's a very nice way of doing what you just said about praying for somebody. And that's the whole meaning of a prayer, when you're not just praying for yourself, but praying for others.
That's right. I agree.
Now this brings, I'm sorry.
Thanksgiving is another category, which are very powerful. I mean, the whole Mass, for example, is a prayer of thanksgiving, praise and thanksgiving. And I find that, for me especially, an enormously powerful time, because, I mean, that turns the petition thing on its head, very much as I think you were just saying, Ashish, of not praying for yourself, but giving thanks to God for the blessings he's already given us that are so powerful. And if you start with that kind of prayer, the other prayer has a different note to it, I think. Correct. The other styles, if you will.
Correct.
Prayers of worship.
Right.
We each in our faiths have stories of examples of God interacting with man. And so I would like to talk a little bit about a story of prayer that you have in your faith about someone who teaches us something deeper and stronger about prayer. Can you think of a story in your faith that there's a story like that?
There are a couple of very famous examples if you look at the Indian scriptures. Obviously, we are familiar with Gandhi. You know, he was just not a political leader, but he was also a spiritual leader.
Yes.
And he began his day with simple prayer and ended his day every day with a prayer. And every action that he performed as if it was performed through him by God. So he wasn't so much attached to the what kind of results it will lead to. He was just more focused on the process, because always back of a mind, he always had God in his heart, prayers in heart. Matter of fact, even when he died, the last word that came out from his mouth was, "Hey, Lord." So basically, he was a figure, even though he was karma yogi, I call it, actively action-oriented person, he always had that back of his mind. He always remained very close to God. The other example that comes in my mind is, Western audience may not be familiar with it, but Indian audiences, and it's example of Mirabai. And she was a princess of Rajasthan. At the very early age, her mother told her that Lord Krishna is the one you are going to marry to, jokingly. And she believed that in her heart, saying that Lord Krishna is going to be, she'll be marrying to Lord Krishna. So even after she's married to a king, she's completely devoted in her heart to Lord Krishna, because she's married to Lord Krishna. So yes, she's married, but she's not, her heart is with Lord Krishna. Obviously her family is not happy with it, and they try to poison her. She drinks the poison, but nothing happens to her. She survives because of the faith that she had in Lord Krishna. And eventually she renounces the world and becomes a hermit and travels all over India and sings the praises of Lord. But that's the story that a lot of Indians are familiar with. The Gandhi story is a lot of Westerns are familiar with. So I want to bring two different stories in a perspective so that we can understand how cultural variants vary, you know? So.
I was thinking particularly, first of all, I was thinking of my great grandmother, because she was quite a prayer, but she had this way of allowing others into her prayer and to draw them in. And she was a person of deep faith. And she actually discerned, I think, the action she was supposed to do through the prayer, just something along what you were doing. And it was very impressive to me as a kid to watch this. And I always got drawn in by this. And the favorite one in our family, I remember well, but I don't remember, it was told me, that when Huey Long, who was like the dictator of Louisiana in the mid-30s, and there was always Annie Long and Pro-Long people, but our family was an Annie Long group. And getting into politics, by the way, but that she was rocking back and forth in the back room with her rosary, and she'd pray one Hail Mary for him to live and one Hail Mary for him to die after he was assassinated. And she finally decided that she had to end on the living, because that was more important than the good of what she thought his death would bring to the state. Very down to earth example. The other one is one I've seen many times, but I can remember particularly a man who had serious cancer, and he had about a year to go, and there was really no hope that he would get any better. It was very, very serious. And yet, the rest of his life was even more what his life had been. That is to say, someone who loved, someone who gave to others, someone who became, I like to say what our Eastern Church says, divinized, you know, that divinity in him became almost total. You know, and you can see that when people who have a good prayer life, when they have that kind of obstacle, that more mortal obstacle, especially in their lives. I think these people who are on planes have those moments, you know, as they get through a terrible thing like what happened the other day in the plane that was above Colorado. And they said, you know, I gathered hands, we prayed, and what you hear after that is, you know, my life has changed. Because those moments for people, as you said, Ashish, people who are faithful people, people who have good hearts, is going to be a different, is going to be a way in which they can reach the divine, correct. I think.
But again, you know, you're talking about the rosary beads, and I have seen my own grandmother who had retired, but you always see her walking around or sitting in a corner with japamala, we call it. And they're constantly, even when they're doing something, constantly they're rotating the japamala with mental chanting of a God. And I have seen that here as well, that people always, some people have rosary beads and they're always, you know, using their fingers to.
You know, that the rosary is, of course, and most Catholics don't even have a clue of this, the idea of beads came, of course, from the Middle East, and I imagine from your area too, rather than something that was Western European origin, Lord knows.
Tell us a little bit about the history of the rosary.
Well, the rosary, it's mired in clouds, I have to tell you, the origin of the rosary. And it's changed from the beginning in terms of the number of prayers and all of that. It didn't just spring up to be exactly what it is today. But the origin of it is supposed, most people say, is from St. Francis of Assisi, who is, you know, the animal saint, as we like to call him, the saint of the environment, who found this on his pilgrimage to Jerusalem and brought it back to the Western world, the idea of praying with beads, and especially using Mary in his case as an example of getting into this meditation. Mary, of course, being the great example for prayer of all sorts to God in the Christian scriptures, except for Jesus, of course. But it became very much as a Catholic prayer, especially when it had one of these miracles, if you wish to call it that, when unfortunately had to do with a battle, of course, where the Christians overpowered the Muslims. Lovely idea that a prayer came from that. But that's how it got to be such a popular prayer, I think, in the Catholic Church in the middle of the Middle Ages.
Ashish, do you have... Yes. Yeah. Do you have prayer beads in the Hindu faith?
Well, you can see in my hand, I'm wearing something called the Rudraksha bead. And they come, there are different kind of those beads. Normally, it has 108 of these beads, and you rotate it clockwise. But there's a meaning behind it. And meaning is obviously when you are circling and rotating, you're also focusing you're also mentally chanting the name of the Lord. So you're helping with concentration and focusing your mind on the Almighty Lord. And the symbolic meaning is that Lord Shiva, which is one of the trinities that we have, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Brahma is a Lord of creation, we call it. Vishnu is a Lord of maintenance, we call it. And Shiva is a Lord of destruction. And the story goes like Shiva was really upset the way world affairs were going. He was not happy with what was happening. And he becomes very emotional. And he cries. And from his tears, where the tears fall, a tree grows up. And on the tree, they had beads called draksha. And so people consider it as a very symbolic divine way of message from God. And so that's what they call it. Japamala, we call it.
Perhaps I should have said something about the organization of the rosary. Do you want me to do that? 50 prayer, 53 total of Hail Marys. And then there are the Lord's Prayer that surround all of those, one for every 10. So there are five times that we do the Lord's Prayer. And it ends up with the Creed, with the Apostles' Creed.
That brings up another question that I had. Is there in your faith a prayer that is commanded to be recited, or maybe commanded is too strong of a word, but suggested, a favorite prayer that is in the faith that everybody knows and everybody can recite?
Well, I'm not too sure whether you are ready for some shlokas, which is obviously our ancient language is Sanskrit. So most of the prayers are in Sanskrit. And I'm going to talk about the universal prayer in a sense, because that practically every time when we have prayers, we always recite one or two of these particular shlokas, and they're universal shlokas. So one of them is, so I'm going to chant a little bit in Sanskrit, okay? And then I'll explain you the meaning of it, okay? So first one goes like, Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kishit Dukha Bhaveta. Om Shanti 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 Hi. So meaning is that may all be prosperous and happy. May all be free from illness. May all see uplifting in their life. May there be happiness and peace in all. May all be successful. So that's the universal prayer that we do it for everybody. Then there's another prayer. I'm going to recite in Sanskrit and explain you the meaning of it. Om Sahana Bhavaktu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahviryam Karvavahai Tejas Vina Vaditamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti 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 Hi. So basically that means this: we are praying for the God, oh mighty Lord, please protect us. Please give us nourishment. Please help us work together with great energy. Make us more knowledgeable. Let there be peace in our mind. Let there be peace in nature. Let there be peace in environment and all the forces of action. Please give us peace, peace, peace. So these are the universal prayers.
I think that's probably similar in the Christian church, that we have, of course, these big prayers, which are everywhere, the Lord's Prayer and the Hail Mary and the doxology, glory be to the Father and to the Son and to the Holy Spirit, kind of call ejaculations in our tradition, is Lord be merciful to me, a sinner, or peace be with you. In one way or another, just as you were saying, Ashish, that theme of peace is, of course, what we all search for and try to be part of in God. So those are just two or three that come to my mind. But generally, I think Christians and even Catholics today are more comfortable with these short prayers, which come from the heart, and that some people have, you know, made for themselves, which is perfectly fine. If the heart is fine, as you said, Ashish,
I agree.
Prayer is going to be fine.
Correct.
So there's a lot of less sort of rote learning, I think, in prayers today in the Catholic Church than they used to be.
Well, after speaking those beautiful prayers that both of you talked about, you can pray for me anytime.
You are in my prayers.
We're sorry to say we're coming to an end of the program. And just to kind of let you know, I had 16 questions that I wanted to ask, and we've only asked or we only answered three.
Well, our conversation was very enlightening. So I think whoever is listening to the broadcast, they get the meaning of what we are trying to say.
Right.
Yes.
Mike and myself and you being our moderator. So I think we cover practically everything that should be covered.
Yes, absolutely. This has been an hour filled with wonderful information and insight on prayer. Thank you so much for participating today, the both of you. We've had the pleasure of talking with Ashish Modi and Pike Thomas. You've been listening to About Faith on Red River Radio. I hope you enjoyed the meeting our guest and the panel today. If you have questions that you would like for the panel to address, please email us at redriverradiomail@gmail.com. That's redriverradiomail@gmail.com. Be sure to tune in on Red River Radio next Sunday at 1 p.m. for Illuminations. And don't forget to tune in 2 weeks from now for more conversations about many more important topics as we go forward learning about each other, the people of faith in our community. This is Marcy Howard with lots more questions about faith. Thank you for being with us, and may your prayers be with us.
Thank you, Marcy.
Thank you.
It was a beautiful hour.
Yes, sir. Thank you.